On this episode of Skeptico, Dr. Stephen Novella of The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe on Medium Research.
Starting hypothesis is that there is no paranormal psychic phenomenon going on here. Certainly, we're certainly on record that that is our current position based upon the evidence that we've seen so far. The whole point of designing a protocol is that the biases that we go into it should be rendered irrelevant.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on today, You know, I always say, welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science. I really have to stop saying that. I mean, that's just playing right into this skeptical mindset that when we talk about things like psi or when we talk about things like medium research, we're talking about controversial science. Well, it's controversial, sure, but doesn't that kind of miss the point? You know, one of the most frustrating and at the same time exciting things about what we're trying to do on Skeptico is the vast unexplored territory that is human consciousness. Why is this not being researched? We've started the work with the dogs that know experiment, and it's generated a little bit of interest. But why is that not explored more? And today we're going to venture into the second experiment that we're doing on mediumship research. That is, can a psychic connect with someone's deceased relatives and access information that would otherwise be impossible to know? Now, can you imagine an area of research that is more directly connected to who we are, where we're going, and what the world is really all about? And yet the amount of real research that's done in this area is so minuscule that it can be summarized with one person's name, Gary Schwartz. Let me correct that. Two people's names, Gary Schwartz and his research assistant and now researcher on her own at the Windbridge Institute, Julie Bischel. Well, I'm very happy to say that we here at Skeptico are going to add just a tiny little bit to this scant bit of research that's being done by conducting a demonstration in cooperation with The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe and Dr. Stephen Novella. Now, I have to say, it took a little bit of prodding, but I'm very, very happy that they are joining us. And I think a collaborative effort between a group that's clearly very skeptical of this phenomena is the way that everyone agrees is the best way forward in coming to some greater understanding and generating further awareness and hopefully more interest in researching this very important topic. So on today's show, we're going to kick off this little project that we're doing. And I'm going to share with you the recording that Steve's group and I had last week regarding the protocol that we're going to use for this demonstration. It's about an hour long. There's a lot of detail in there. There's not a lot of juicy nuggets, a lot of just normal kind of back and forth discussion about the protocol. But I think it's useful in terms of documenting where we're coming from and how we're approaching this research. So without any more introduction than that, let's go to this conference call with Stephen Novella and the crew from The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe on the Medium Research Protocol.
Show me your pretty face. It's the only thing gets me out of this state.
Hey, Steve, I'm just going to say, before we jump into this, I just want to make sure, are you guys comfortable that we'll record this? And then, you know, I know your schedule's pretty busy, but I'm fine in terms of putting it out just as we record it as a podcast. Because I think one of the things beside you know, you're trying to prove one thing, I'm trying to prove another. I think one of the things we're trying to do is just expose the process to people as much as we can.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I mean, I'll be recording at my end as well.
Right. So I am too, and we'll, as last time when we talked, we'll either agree to some agreed edited version or we'll just agree to just publish the whole thing.
Right. Actually, Jay's coming in now.
Oh.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, guys.
Jay.
So we got Alex with us. We're just talking about recording the conversation, you know, so that we could either side can use it for our podcasts, which I agree to. You guys have no problem with that, right?
This conversation?
This conversation, yeah. To document the process of the discussion. And Jay, do I need to chat you the most recent version of the protocol, or do you have what I sent earlier today? I'll just send it out again.
It might be useful to go over the protocol now, although we really don't have many points of disagreement on it. So, you know, we can also just publish that and maybe talk about the points that we do have disagreement. And the other thing I thought would be interesting to cover from the perspective of both recording where you guys are coming at and where I'm coming at are some of the questions that you asked me and then some of the questions that I'd ask you back in terms of where we see this thing going. You asked me, hey, what is going on? What do you think is going on? And I'd like to ask those questions. And I think that's what people would like to hear, too, in terms of framing this this demonstration. We can't really call it a research project, but it's demonstration.
I agree. You know, calling it a demonstration is fine. You know, I was just in terms of our overall interest in this, you know, we'd like to, you know, have the process be at least sufficiently controlled that we could do some objective scoring of how the medium performs. And avoid as much as possible any, you know, subjective interpretation of what happened. Now, there's almost no limit on how detailed you can get, you know, in terms of making everything quantifiable and blinded, et cetera. And again, we just don't have, I think, the time and resources to do something to that level. We're just hoping to do a reasonable demonstration of, you know, these are the things that we were concerned about, you know, accounting for all the things that you and the medium are concerned about so that everyone's happy, and then we'll just see how it plays out.
Right. I think that's the spirit of things. And, you know, to that end, I have to say, I mean, we'll see how this plays out, but based on your earlier podcast and the opinions you've expressed, I mean, let's establish, you believe that there's absolutely nothing happening here, nothing telepathic or spiritual is in even a remote way possible. So the bar in that sense is pretty low, and we can quibble over scoring and statistics and all those kind of things, but you guys aren't coming at this from the perspective of how accurate it is, because the last time you did this at the psychic fair, you said it was pretty obvious that nothing wasn't going on. So
yeah,
I think you're very wrong in that the bar is set very high, because what you're saying is that you're expecting some extraordinary psychic powers to be demonstrated, and so we're going to ask for extraordinary results.
Well, I agree with that. What I would say is, yeah, certainly our starting point, our starting hypothesis is that there is no paranormal psychic phenomenon going on here. Certainly, we're certainly on record that is our current position based upon the evidence that we've seen so far. The whole point of designing a protocol is that the biases that we go into it should be rendered irrelevant, that it's going to be carried out in an objective enough way that whatever we think going into it shouldn't affect the results. That's the whole point of agreeing to a protocol. And in terms of where to set the bar, where we're coming from is it has to be set high enough, and the protocol has to be at least tight enough that we can rule out what our hypothesis is, which is that this is a cold reading, that mediums produce the results that they do through cold reading. So what I anticipate is that there's going to be, you know, three broad ranges of possible results. One is there's going to be a fairly dramatic actual effect taking place that is not well accounted for by a cold reading, and that would therefore seem to support that there was some other actual process going on, some, you know, psychic medium or something else, some anomalous process going on. There'll be a clearly negative could be a clearly negative result where what we're seeing is just purely chance guessing and completely consistent with cold reading. But there's clearly also going to be a broad fuzzy range in between where it's going to be hard to say based upon these results. So I think we have to be thinking in those terms that, you know, at least broadly defined where these three ranges of results are. Right. Results that we would agree show something anomalous, where you would agree clearly does not show something anomalous. And yeah, there's going to be this fuzzy, you know, borderland in between.
I agree with that. And I think it's also, as you're alluding to, and I like the way you stake that out, we could very well fall into that fuzzy ground, but we could very well fall into those either one of those categories where I just don't think we'd have much disagreement. From the way you described your experience in the psychic fair, I would not argue or kind of interject some other hypothesis about what might have been going on. It was a failure. I don't doubt that those happen and that there's really no way to explain those away. I'd also add that in terms of the protocol, and I don't think there's a large point of disagreement here based on the exchange we've had about the protocol. You do a couple simple things like we've done, and you've basically nailed down the biggest parts of the protocol. You have a phone reading, number one, where people can't see each other. You limit the amount of interaction that people are having in terms of the answers back and forth. And then third, you control any chance that the sitter and the reader know each other or have any information before, mm-hmm. and there's not a lot else. So that pretty much rules out a cold reading. I don't think you would have any disagreement with that, right?
Well, it limits a cold reading. Cold reading partly is a process of making guesses that are high probability about anybody. So that does not require any feedback or prior knowledge. That's just making statements that sound specific but actually are likely to be endorsed as positive by anybody, which is why in the protocol we have to have a designation of that this is a vague statement, right? And one of the ways in which cold readings produce the impression of an actual phenomenon going on is that these vague statements are produced in order to give a high probability hit, and then that's later interpreted as a specific hit. So just to be clear, cold reading does not depend entirely on feedback or prior knowledge. There are some techniques that are independent of that. And then we're going to have to try – that's where I see the fuzzy area most likely to be. If the medium says something about the sitter that is true – but that's just high probability. You know, what are we going to make of that? She says, "Oh, I see that you have financial concerns."
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that's the kind of thing that sure. You know, 80% of people are going to say yes to that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, let's take something as an example. Let me just ask you a question. Maybe this will help, Alex. Like, do you think it's just as likely that a psychic would be able to divine the name of the sitter's mother as the psychic would be able to divine another name of somebody else in that person's life that would be, you know, an uncommon person to ask about, like an ex-boyfriend or a girlfriend or something a lot more vague? You know, if you had psychic ability, would you be able to pull out that information just as readily as, you know, something very common or easy to get to?
I don't know, Jay. I mean, that presupposes so many things. I mean, one thing that it touches on a couple of points, though. One, as you know from the emails I've sent you, I've enlisted the support or the help of Julie Bichel, who is mm-hmm. the person who has done these experiments and has published in peer-reviewed journals the results of them. From her work with Gary Schwartz at the University of Alabama, she's highly qualified, well-trained. Whether you like her, whether you like her research, she brings a degree of professionalism to this that I'm relying on to make sure that we do things as close to a true scientific protocol as we can. Now, the reason I bring that up, Jay, is because one of the points that she had in her kind of tips for us to look at is to try and remove as much as we can any kind of preconceptions we might have about how this phenomena works. And I think we have to. What we're demonstrating here is potentially that there is a phenomena to be explored or there isn't a phenomena to be explored. We don't want to jump into the business of guessing or imagining how that, you know, phenomena might manifest itself.
That's fair enough, but unfortunately, when you're trying to do a scientific protocol, you do have to make assumptions about the properties of the phenomenon you're looking at. Otherwise, you're just anomaly hunting. So you have to be willing to commit yourself to at least some working hypothesis. Otherwise, you just can't test it. And, for example, we could go through her tips one by one, and I could tell you why I pretty much disagree with all of them right down the line. They're actually designed to maximize a cold reading, and they're designed to minimize any scientific utility of the information that we get or the scoring process.
I saw some of the points that I anticipate that you're jumping into there, and I don't even want to go there because we're going to be able to control that ourselves, right. Your side and our side, in terms of how we do that. I think, you know, the other way of reading that, though, Steve, is we don't want to go in with such a bias that we're trying to, rip the heart out of the experiment and not provide it. Because one point that was mentioned, and now I forget, maybe it was on your point, Jay, or maybe it was yours, Steve, and that's that, you know, the flip side of that kind of fishing for general information, you might be having financial problems, is a phenomenon that I have experienced in the past with one of the readings that I had, and I've, you know, documented on the Skeptico show that I've had several readings, and that I've had maybe four readings, and three of them were almost total flops, and I had one that was really significant. And part of the most significant part of that experience for me, and this has been kind of affirmed by other people I've spoken with about their reading experience, is that there'll be one or two things that are just seem, if you were to pass them along to someone else, would seem almost meaningless, but are highly significant to the individual. Like maybe a song. Someone will say, you know, does this song mean anything to you? And the person will just, you know, break down in tears and go, yeah, that, you know, that's the song. Da-da. And I think that the scoring system has to account for that too, that, you know, the fact that someone could pick a song that has such deep meaning for a person is more than just a, oh, well, check that off. That's a 50-50 chance. So that's what I mean when I say we don't want to rip the heart out of the scoring system either in order to provide some kind of external notion that we have going in of what a proper control is.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, in this kind of a reading that we're going to be scoring, there are some things that are going to be fairly objective, you know, and we're going to give the greatest weight to those kind of things. If the medium, for example, says your mother's name is Margaret and the sitter's name is Margaret, well, that's a direct specific hit. There's no arguing about that. If the medium says, you know, I'm hearing this song, and she gives the whatever the name or the tune of the song, and then the sitter says, yes, that specific song has significance to me, and here it is. Okay, that's a hit too. I mean, I think we would give that a hit. It's not as specific as your mother's name is Margaret, because I mean, how many songs might strike a chord with somebody? It certainly is different. But we would, you know, absolutely, I think that we're definitely not going into this with a bias, or we don't want to skew the test so that to make it negative. We just want, again, I think it's clear, we have to keep crystal clear that the protocol is worthless if it can't distinguish cold reading from a genuine psychic or medium reading, right? I mean, that's the bottom line. If it doesn't make that distinction, then it's not going to serve any purpose for anybody. We'll both come out of it with the same preconceived notions we went into it with. It just wouldn't be a useful protocol if it doesn't do that. So, so you like just like for example, I don't know, and I don't know if you meant to incorporate these tips specifically into the protocol, but like for example, one of the tips is numbers conveyed during a reading may mean a variety of things. For example, four may mean one of four children, the fourth child, a birth, death, anniversary, et cetera, in April or on the 4th, 14th, or 24th day of a month. I mean, this is like right out of a cold reading handbook, right? That kind of maximizing the possible number of hits. I would not count that kind of thing. If somebody said four and it turned out to be one of 20 different possible interpretations of the number four, that's not a hit. That's cold reading.
Except,
Steve, do you agree with that?
Well, you have to remember the context in which that it's given, and that's that she has the tightest controls on the other side of it in terms of communication. If you look at her published research on the last experiment that she did, they had no exchange of information between the reader and the sitter. So, it, you know, what she's providing there are tips for the reader to, for the sitter to interpret results. Now, I don't know if those are after the fact or in it, but I can see where what she's trying to do is say, don't immediately try and take everything in a completely concrete sense. And let me tell you how I think it would play out in our scenario.
This is tips on scoring a reading. So that's
scoring a reading, right?
Yeah, so that's what she's talking about here, right? That's what we're talking about, how to score the reading,
right? And I think here's how it can play out, right? Your scenario is, I would agree with you, okay? I would agree with you. If someone's fishing and go, does four mean anything to you? And you know, yes. And say, and then if they follow up, so then it's really is the follow up, right? Because they only can provide a yes no answer. Does four mean anything to you? Yes. Does it mean anything with your family? Yes. Does it have to do with your kids? Yes. Is it the number of children you have? Yes. Well, I think that's significant. I don't think you could necessarily, it's not super significant. I wouldn't give it like a super high probability, but it could be. We have to be open to the possibility of her first point there, that this is not a phone conversation between a deceased person in some kind of spiritual form and this medium who is in the middle. We do not understand the process of communication. So we have to be as flexible as possible at the same time, provide the kind of controls that you're talking about. I'm not against that.
Right. Okay. Well, and just again, to make our position clear, because this is sort of the dilemma that we're in a little bit, is that it is my hypothesis that the form that a medium reading takes has evolved over time to conform to an actual cold reading. It's not a coincidence that the way that mediums think the spirit communication works actually also happens to work just like a cold reading. That's not a coincidence. That happened over time because that's what they were doing, whether they were consciously doing it or subconsciously doing it. And just like what you described, you know, there's a magician's trick, a mentalist trick called the magician's choice, where they ask a series of yes or no questions and they could get somebody to a predetermined choice. Or you can also use that to make it seem as if you knew what the answer was at the beginning when you didn't until the end. So we can't let it take the form of, you know, actual mentalist cold reading tricks that have evolved over time.
Right. But you know, the flip side, I do. But you know, the flip side to your hypothesis, that's your hypothesis, and fair enough.
Right.
My hypothesis is exactly the opposite, that the cold reading trick has evolved in a way to simulate and take advantage of the real medium exchange that people are familiar with, and then add to it the tricks of the trade that a magician or a mentalist knows to make it work for them. So there's no way of knowing the origin of these things or why they happen the way they do. All we can do is what we're doing, try and apply the best controls we can and try and be as forthright and open as possible about evaluating the results.
What about putting in a control of some kind or, you know, one thing while we were discussing this over the past couple of months, I kept saying to everyone was, you know, it'd be interesting to see someone do a cold reading and see if the cold reader could beat or be statistically better than what the medium comes up with.
Love to see you do it. Would love to see you do it. Would love to see that, because I think that's one thing that really is aggravating to me is so many skeptics have kind of thrown out this cold reading idea, and I've never seen a cold reader operate with any kind of controls close to this. Challenge out there. Anyone do it. We do it in this experiment. Wonderful. A cold reader to sit down on a phone reading with the other person only being able to say yes, no, I don't know, and get statistical results. Would love to see it.
Hey, well, that is definitely a challenge that we will take up, because I have seen mentalist cold readers perform better by an order of magnitude than anyone proclaiming to be a psychic or a medium, in my opinion. But let's quantify it. So we could take this, whatever protocol we come up with, as phase two, once we do the mediums that you select for us, we'll be happy to select, you know, cold readers to do the same protocol and compare the two.
Great.
So let's put that as phase two once we get a protocol. So why don't we go through? So again,
hey Steve, don't like, that's cool, and I'm really happy to hear that both of you guys are interested in that. But do you think it would help our research here if we did have some type of baseline or something to compare it to?
I don't think that's necessary. Let me just interject. I don't think that's necessary because I think that this is all going to come down to, unless the results are really obvious, and we'll know that right away, it's all going to come down to the scoring. And I think we're just going to have an open discussion about that. If it's in that middle ground, it's going to be, I don't know that we can control ourselves into falling into one of those categories that Steve outlined at the beginning of either definitely positive, definitely negative.
Okay. Right. I mean, well, you know, I think that it's either going to be definitely negative or gray zone. You know, you obviously think it's going to be either, if the medium is genuine, it should be either gray zone or definitely positive.
Well, what I'll go on record is saying, what I think is going to happen, I think we're going to have readings. I think we're going to have readings that are definitely positive. I think we're going to have readings that are definitely negative. And I think we're going to have readings that are in the gray zone.
Right. But, you know, this is, again, because this is a demonstration, this is not actually a scientific experiment because we don't have things like a baseline. We don't have any kind of validated test that we're using. You know, we don't have all that background information that's necessary to know how to interpret your data. But it's not a bad starting point. In fact, Jay, this kind of is a baseline. This is a baseline doing mediums, and then we can compare it to experienced, purposeful cold readers and then see how they sort out, you know. If one group does consistently better than the other, then that would tend to support one hypothesis or the other. So let's finalize the actual details of this protocol. So the version that I have in writing here is the last one that I sent you, although I did correct the grammatical stuff that was pointed out. So that's all corrected. But so why don't you tell me which items you would like to discuss?
I think we should read every single one of them. Like, let's do it right and go through the whole protocol together.
Do you want to do that on sure, if you want to do that live, we can do that.
You can edit it out if it's too long, or, you know, we're all going to take snippets from this anyway. So I think if we're trying to conduct a good study, let's go through the whole thing together one last time.
The only thing I'd say is I have about 45 minutes before I have to resume my duties at home here. And I guess the other thing I'd say is, you know, if that was that Jay who just said that?
Yeah.
Jay, what I do is focus in on the ones that you think are going to be most controversial because I only have one or two points. Other than that, I don't see anything controversial, and we can definitely publish that whole thing. But I'm open if you want to go through it quickly.
Yeah, that's fine, Jay. I don't know if you joined us late, but yeah, we'll just publish the written protocol, and let's just talk about the points of contention here. Okay. So again, what I sent you, I'm happy with that was my final version or my latest version, so I'm happy with it. So you tell me, Alex, which points you would like to discuss.
The only point I wanted to discuss, and it's not even a major point, was the one brought up by Julie Bichelle, and that's that, well, there's two minor points. One on 3D, the allowed answers. Yes, no, I don't know. Fine. She suggested we add a maybe, or I'm not sure, you know, some flexibility in how they answer those in that way. So
we have yes, no, and I don't know.
So I guess we want to add maybe to that.
I'm not adverse to that. I mean, I think that kind of not sure, I think, is the same thing as I don't know functionally. Basically, any time the sitter cannot answer yes or no, there's what's the default answer? You know, I don't know if we need to parse that out to maybe versus not sure versus I don't know. I mean, I think that's unnecessary complexity.
Perhaps.
I think it should probably just be can't answer. Yes, no, or can't answer. A maybe isn't a good idea because a maybe can lead to other sort of inferences on the part of the cold reader. So I think that a can't answer would probably suffice.
Yes, no, I don't know, or can't answer.
Or can't answer.
I'm unable to answer.
We'll see. Let's just see how it goes, and we don't want to get too, I think, anal about it. We want to.
This is kind of important.
Yeah, because obviously feedback is a major component of cold reading. So how, you know, controlling the feedback is a critical point.
Okay. Well,
I do think that this, you know, whether or not we allow maybe versus I don't know versus can't answer is kind of splitting hairs. It's basically yes, no, and then I can't give a yes or no answer for whatever reason.
Okay, I'm sure we can work that out. The last point that I had was your point about any information given about people other than the sitter should be disqualified. And I think Julie's point was, and I think it's a good point, is that we shouldn't automatically disqualify that information. Where I saw you going was, you don't want a fishing expedition of, is there anyone out there with the name of Mike?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. So, you know, so that was just vague on my point. I meant what she said, which is that the medium, we're only going to score hits that relate to the sitter or people that relate directly to the sitter. So it's okay if they're talking about the sitter's dead uncle. That's fine. It just can't be about, you know, her friend's dead uncle that the sitter never heard of or never saw before. But just, you know, there has to be some limitations set on how much we're going to expand the possible field of hits, because that's the other mechanism that is used to generate false positives. And again, just to put things further into a scientific perspective, what we're really talking about here is balancing false positives versus false negatives, right? And meaning scoring a hit that's actually not psychic, and which would be a false positive, or scoring a miss, something that actually was psychic, which would be a false negative. We're obviously more concerned about limiting false positives, and you're concerned about limiting false negatives. But in all scientific studies, it's almost like it's a zero-sum game. You have to strike a balance between the two, and the protocol is always going to be sacrificing one at the expense of the other. So it's just a matter of finding the balance.
Right.
So yeah, we may be excluding hits. Maybe the psychic did get information about the sitter's friend's, you know, third cousin's uncle, and we won't count it because it doesn't directly relate to someone that's connected more directly to the sitter. But if we do allow that kind of thing, it becomes impossible to score because, you know, if you allow second and third and fourth generation connections to the sitter, that the number of possible targets for the hit becomes so open that hits become meaningless, right?
Agreed. And you know, we're back to the same thing we keep touching on, and it'll be an interesting part of this whole procedure, and that's scoring. So we'll have some fun doing that.
So what number was that about the relating to the sitter?
3D? Oh, no, that was the yes, no, maybe.
I think it's maybe 4E. 4E.
Yeah, oh, yeah, right, 4E. So it should be, hits should only apply to the sitter themselves. Okay.
So we're going to stay with that?
So we're going to say the sitter themselves or persons directly connected to the sitter.
Sure, fine.
Right, is that fine?
Yeah.
That's what I meant, but so that's fine to clarify that. And then we also have in there 4E, future predictions will also not be scored as hits. So in other words, turning a past or present prediction to say, well, this is something that's going to happen in the future.
Right.
We're just going to exclude any statements about the future because that's not what we're not – they're unscorable. Right?
Right.
We agree. Okay, fine. So was that it? Were those the only 2 points?
Yes, they were. Those were the only 2 points.
So what's our next step, guys? When do you want to do it? How are we going to orchestrate the actual day of the event? And how are we going to record it? All that stuff.
So we were discussing whether or not it was going to be in person over the phone, Alex, and you wanted to do it over the phone, which I think is fine.
Well, I think over the phone does a couple of really nice things. One, it certainly gets us away from some of the cold reading problems that we run into when people are in close proximity to each other. And the second thing that it does is it just frees us up and makes it a lot easier geographically to hook up people who are far apart.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And also, if we can do it over Skype, we could have whoever's being read responding just via text. And that would limit the amount of cold reading that the purported psychic could do just based on tone of voice, male, female, that kind of thing.
That's a cool idea.
Yeah, but I don't want to get into that.
If the medium's okay with that, I mean, that obviously would be an extra layer of protection against cold reading. But we also want to make sure that this is where the balance thing comes in. I want the medium to say, I can do a reading under these conditions, right? If they think that the conditions are not amenable to a reading, then again, the whole thing becomes pointless.
Well, obviously, that goes for everything.
Yeah, right. And the other thing I would add to the doing it over the Skype or over the phone is that in that case, we can't use the sitter's real name. Because then we are not in control of the environment. We are not in control of the medium. And we can't know that they're not gaining information by ordinary means because they're not going to be physically present with us.
And you're saying we could if it's over a phone.
You know, so if we were in the same room with the medium, I know she's not Googling the sitter, right?
Oh, right, right, right. Well, we can just use a first name. Phone. We're just going to use a first name, right?
Yeah, yeah. So not the person's full name.
Right.
We're not going to give the medium any information that they could use to identify that person individually.
Correct.
And then, right. Okay, that's fine.
Hey, Alex, but I totally will go with that. But I also think it might be interesting if we didn't give the name and see if the medium could actually come up with the name. I mean, if there's any piece of information out there, that would be one you'd think.
I think if we can do it over Skype and just have the person respond via text, then each of the sitters should just get a number and be referred to only by that number.
Well, let's just try and keep it as natural as possible. And I think so. A first name, I think, is a natural way people kind of talk to each other. That's fine. That's one bit of information that they can't.
What does natural have to do with it? I'm not sure I understand.
You know, you're talking about
like you could call a person, you know, like A, for instance.
Is that how you normally talk to people?
You know, the medium is probably going to want something to chew on. You know, so I mean,
well, exactly. But the whole point of this is to not give them anything, you know, to chew on.
I think a first name is benign. You know, that yes, it does give a little bit of demographic information about the person, you know.
It just would have been cool to see if they could come up with that.
Well, it could give an awful lot of information. It can give, you know, an idea of age and nationality and things like that. And so, yeah, if there is no name given, then that allows us to choose, you know, a larger breadth of people and not have to worry about that. And also, if the sitter isn't using their voice to respond yes, no, I don't know, then that's another layer, because then, you know, a voice can give away an awful lot in terms of gender, like in terms of age, and
like are your parents still alive? No.
Right.
It also gives away education level and things like that. It does give away a lot of demographic information. But
what do you think, Alex?
I think we should, again, we're talking about scoring, and I think we'll have fun. And if you want to bring up, we'll see how those points stand up to scoring the results. But I don't think we want to.
But what does that mean? I mean, we're talking about the actual protocol of
right, and I'm saying I think the protocol we have is fine, and I think we'll look at the results. And if you're still making those points at the end when we're scoring the results, then that will be a separate conversation. I think introducing. Well,
okay.
Yes. Go ahead.
First name, though, we're going to do.
But no, you know, if those points affect the actual test, though, then the whole thing is kind of for nothing. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, let's just lock down if we're doing first names or not.
Well, here's the thing. If the tighter the protocol is up front, then the more liberal we could be in the scoring. The looser it is up front, then the tighter we have to be in the scoring. Right, Alex? So if we give the patient's actual first name, or if they're speaking with their voice, then any information that the medium could glean from that, we will be more strict about scoring as a hit. Whereas if they're a ageless, you know, gender nonspecific number or a pseudonym that does not give any information about the individual, and the sitter, I mean, the medium is able to get that information, then, you know, they would score higher. You know what I mean? So either way, we'll make up for any looseness on the actual reading in how we score it. But you have to understand that's how it's going to work. What I would say is, let's find out from each medium what they feel is necessary in order to feel comfortable and to perform a reading. If they really insist on a first name, I'd be okay with allowing that. But then that gets taken into consideration when we score. If they really insist on hearing the person's voice, I would be okay with that, but then we have to take that into consideration when we score. The less contact the medium it will accept up front, the more generous we could be in the scoring. Does that make sense?
I agree, and that's why I say it keeps coming back to scoring, and I think it will all kind of come out in the wash. If someone has a very unique name, has a very unique voice, we'll all hear that, and we'll all be able to kind of figure that stuff out. And I'm not against your idea too. We can certainly ask the medium if they're comfortable with going without those things, or if they're comfortable, working on a keyboard at the same time that they're doing it, and all those things.
And also keep in mind, guys, if we go through this process and we find, oh boy, you know what, we overlooked a couple of glaring things or things that we thought, compromised.
Yeah.
We could do it again.
Oh yeah, I mean, absolutely. We're not going in this completely inexperienced. We've all read, this type of research and have at least monitored these kind of studies. We have some idea how these things work, but this is the first time we're doing this together. If we decide after we get through it that we can improve the protocol and do it again, then we'll hopefully it'll be a learning curve. We'll improve things as we go along. No one gets research protocols perfect the first time through. It's always a work in progress.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay.
But we'll see. Again, if we make it really dramatic results, and then we'll have to go from there.
So when do you want to do it?
Well, one thing I thought would free us up a little bit is if we did it, we don't try and do it all in one day or even 2 days, because we're going to have scheduling issues with both sitters and readers. One thing I thought we might talk about is how we are going to select the sitters. And I was going to pass along that I think Craigslist would be a really good tool to run an ad in Craigslist. And then we're truly picking, I think, from a, pretty random sample there. I mean, there's some demographic issues, but I think that was my suggestion, but I'm open to hearing any other ideas you have, running ads in newspapers or whatever.
I think that, again, using some kind of public forum where we can pick from a large pool of somebody who does not have any prior connection to us or to you or to the medium, obviously, is the way we'll do it. But again, it has to be done in a way that, that you and the medium don't know who it is. Right. So
I mean, I'm happy to help you with that. But I mean, if you control the Craigslist ads, then you would control all that communication. If you don't have the time to do it, I'm happy to help. But I would think that'd be something you'd want to do.
We will do that. We will do that part. And what we will do is disclose in exact detail how the process that we went through to find the sitter. And it will be somebody that we do not know ahead of time, that does not know. That does not know you, that is not, and we'll have some, criteria. Like, they obviously shouldn't be a psychic themselves or whatever, some obvious criteria. Somebody that would be, a good generic sitter and that would be anonymous, basically.
All right, so we're going to need to come up with that criteria then and pass that back and forth to each other.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, this shouldn't be difficult. Well, we're just going to advertise for somebody to partake in this type of experiment without giving them too many details. Then it's also in the protocol that we will coach them so that they know what kind of feedback is permissible and what not to do, what kind of feedback is not permissible. And again, we'll document all of that.
And I just had some points in there as well in terms of we want someone who's open to the idea of spirit communication. We want someone who isn't in grief, didn't have someone close to them just pass in the last 6 months and they're really grieving. That wouldn't be good for either proponents or more skeptical people. And just in general, I think we want people who are know basically what the experiment's about and want to participate in it.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. We definitely don't want to get like a hardcore skeptic in there who is going to unconsciously be biased or consciously be biased. We do want someone that's going to have an open mind. I think it's going to be better results that way.
Sure, that's all reasonable. I mean, again, they should be sort of open and neutral both ways.
Yeah, and I also think that what do you guys think about after we go through it and we do, I don't know how many people we're going to end up doing, but let's say, it's a handful, 3 to 5 or whatever. If those people at that point want to make themselves publicly known to anyone who's interested, like in other words, Alex, if you wanted to talk to them afterwards, I think that is 100% reasonable. If you wanted to do, did you say the no post interview, Steve, or what was the protocol on that?
Well, what we didn't want to have happen is have the sitter and the medium chat with each other about the reading afterwards, because that would contaminate the scoring.
Well, right? what about Alex if he wants to talk to them?
Once it's scored, I think that The medium and the sitter have their very confined interaction as determined by the protocol with the feedback as we outlined it. We get all of the reading, right? We record the whole thing so that we have the reading. Once that's done, then we score it.
Yep.
Once it's scored and done, all the data has been extracted from that experiment, then who cares? We can reveal who the actual person was. Alex can talk to her, whatever. You can do whatever you want. But we have the scoring. It's done. Well, I think it's important to limit any interaction prior to scoring because we don't want there to be any coaching or contamination of how to score it, right?
I agree with all that. The only thing I'd add is I think we should really err on the side of confidentiality, and to that end, I would not.
So it's up to that individual. It's up to them. Once we're
the only thing I was going to add is I think we should try and push people towards being private in their information and not in the enthusiasm saying, yeah, I want to go on and I want to reveal myself. And then 6 months later, they're feeling like, gee, that was a bad decision.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yep, that's a good point.
That's actually a really good point. If we leave any real, no first name, last name revealing, even if the medium guesses their full name, we should maybe still leave it up to the sitter if they want any of that information made public.
Sure.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well,
like what if the psychic says something very, very embarrassing or whatever that happens to be true? I wouldn't want my name attached to that information with thousands of people reading it. Like we are the ones that are in control of the data.
Right.
Well, if we want to be maximally paranoid, we're not doing an actual official protocol. And, I want to do everything that we can at this stage for this not to be considered actual research on a human subject because we don't want to go there, right? That's not what we're doing. But if you want to be maximally paranoid, there are rules in place to protect the privacy of people who do get involved with studies like this. So even though this is just a demonstration and we want to be clear about that, I think complying with those rules just to be extra careful and ethical is a good thing to do. So that means no personal identifying information gets published publicly, mm-hmm. right?
Okay, but I think behind the scenes, if Alex wants to talk to them and interview them afterwards, I think that's totally legit.
They're two private citizens. Once we're done with the protocol, they can do whatever they want.
Okay. Okay.
Right, but it'll be up to the sitter to make any contact or to make anything known about this. We won't be passing any information on that would identify the individual. That's okay. That's the stand. That's the ethical standard in research.
So let's talk dates and how to, guys.
Well, I think, Alex, it's the ball's in your court in terms of finding a medium, right? Or do you already have...
We have the mediums lined up, and we're using the mediums that Julie Bichelle has used in her research, which gives us a certain leg up in terms of they understand the process and should be pretty comfortable with explaining what's going on.
So do you want to get just a preliminary agreement that we'll record this on a Thursday evening? Because this is actually a good night for us in terms of working around our podcast.
Okay, great.
And then the limiting factor at this point is we will find a sitter and then just come up with a Thursday night where we're all available and then push that out to you guys.
Okay, great. And then I guess then we can deal with the actual procedure of doing it, whether we'd have the sitter go through a sequence of sittings that night or whether we'd, shuffle or have the medium read various sitters. We'll just have to figure that out and space it out as best we can. Because we could have, you see what I'm saying? We could have a sitter go and sit with three different mediums, one after another, or we could have the medium read for three different people, one after another.
Yeah, I think it would be complicated to have one sitter and multiple mediums, because then each reading will not necessarily be independent or uncontaminated. So why don't we just do one sitter, that each sitter gets read once. And if we can set up multiple sitters in an evening, then we'll do that. But we're only going to have each sitter have one reading. Does that make sense?
No, but in phase two, if we ever get to that, Steve, it would be really, really interesting to have a medium do a reading on the same sitter that a cold reader does it. So we could compare the two side by side and watch the process unfold and see what information each one gets out of the same person. That would be cool.
Yeah, that would be interesting, although the other layer of complexity when you do that is that We have to make sure that whoever's doing the reading second gets no information from the first reading.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
So let me make sure I understand, Steve. Are you thinking then that for the people who are going to get the readings, the sitters, how many readings are they going to get? Just one?
Each sitter will get one reading. Yeah.
I think it would be useful to have them. It's totally independent in terms of one reading to the next. I think it would be, even if we spread it out over several days or nights, to have them get at least a couple of readings from.
But that adds an extra layer of complexity, is that then it's up to us to make sure that there's no contamination from one medium to the next. And that's a layer of complexity.
I see what you're getting at, Steve. Uh-huh.
How do I know that medium one isn't giving the feedback that they got to on passing it on to medium two?
Right.
That's a good point, Steve.
Yeah, so I don't want to deal with that complexity. We could just completely eliminate that possibility by just having each setter only be read once.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, there's no reason why we need to recycle the same sitter. I mean, we'll probably get so many people in that we will find 10 people if we need to without a hitch.
Right, we'll see. Right. I don't know. I have no idea how easy or hard it's going to be.
I think you're right. I think you'll find a ton of people on Craigslist. Yeah.
In which case, it shouldn't be a problem to have multiple sitters, you know, so we can have one sitter with each medium you have available that evening. And, you know, just the fatigue factor, we're probably not going to want to do more than one or two in a night, I'm guessing.
Right.
Reading going to last? I mean, we're going to put a 30-minute time limit, an hour, or what do you want to do?
That's actually a good point. I don't think we set a time limit.
You know, you had suggested...
I did. 30 minutes. I said 30 minutes.
I think that's perfect. And I think what we ought to shoot for then is getting two readings in on a night. And then
that's fine.
And then maybe we do it.
Okay, because for setup and the post stuff that we'll do, you know, it'll be like an hour and a half to a 2 hour thing. Now, is there going to be a moderator? Who's going to be the moderator, and how's that going to be handled?
Well, I think we're each, like, Alex and one of us will monitor the sitting, right? So because we have to, and we're going to be recording it, so then we'll all be able to listen to it afterwards.
Perfect. That sounds good. And again, Skype is the ideal tool here because we can Skype out.
We can each record.
Right. We can each record. We can Skype out to people that have the phones, and we can do all the stuff we want to do in the background.
Exactly.
But guys, I'm also, you know, I think it would be good if, so you'll end up with four people in the chat room. And then, Steve, you and Alex can, you know, if something happens that's unpredictable, right? Like a protocol is breached or something, you guys are going to have to chime in and say, hey, you know, we would prefer not that. You can't, you know, ask questions like this or that or whatever. Like, you guys are going to have to,
We say if the sitter inadvertently reveals inappropriate information to the medium, that will not disqualify the sitter or the reading, but that information will be considered when scoring the results, right?
But
so any hits that flow from the information just won't count.
Do you think there's going to be a situation where you're actually going to need to break into the reading and say,
You never know. But we might have to. We might have to remind the sitter of the coaching that we did, because they're only allowed to say yes, no, or I can't answer that question. So if they say anything else, I'll have to say you're only supposed to, you know, give yes, no, or I don't know answers. And if, you know, because that just decreases the amount of information we're going to get out of that sitting. Remember then.
But I think you and Alex need to be on and be able to talk to each other, because you might have to make an on-the-fly decision.
Yeah, and then again, once we see how it goes, you know, we may want to throw some extra protocols in there just to correct any errors that are cropping up that we didn't anticipate.
Yeah,
but I think what will happen is, you know, if we properly coach the sitter, that would minimize the chance of any problem cropping up like that. But if it does, we'll deal with it on the fly. And again, it'll all be recorded, it's already agreed upon in the protocol that any contamination that comes from that will factor out in the scoring process.
Okay. All right. So now, once again, guys, dates.
Jay, we have to find a sitter. That's the next step.
Yeah, but do you want to put some parameter on it? Like, you know, I'll start looking immediately, Steve. Like, I could start
as soon as we get people. As soon as we have someone lined up, then we say, all right, what's the next Thursday we're all available, and that's when we'll do it.
Great.
Okay. Fine.
Let's get somebody first, and hopefully we can get two. We'll try to get two people lined up for the first session.
Great. No, that's a good plan. And then that also gives me the flexibility. If we have three different readers, I'm sure I'll be able to get one of them to sit in for, you know, the night that we pick.
Good. That sounds great. So I think we have a plan.
Good. This is good, guys. We're going to have a lot of fun doing this.
Yeah, this is always fun.
It'll be good.
Okay. So then the next communication will be, Alex, we'll contact you when we have a few people that we think are ready to move to stage two.
Right. You just might want to touch base with me on how exactly you're going out and what information you're giving folks in recruiting them. But I don't want, I'm not too much of a stickler on that, but I'd like to have a heads up on that.
Yeah, we'll keep you in the loop.
Okay.
All right, guys.
Great. Look
good
forward
talk.
To doing this.
All right, Alex, we'll be talking with you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Good night, Alex.
Good night.
Well, thanks again to Stephen Novella and the group over there at the Skeptics Guide, one, for participating in this demonstration, and two, for agreeing to publish this protocol discussion that we have and share that with everybody. Now, next week, I'm going to continue delving into this Medium research. Hopefully, I'll have an interview up with Julie Bichel, who is going to be assisting us in helping to put together this demonstration and carry it out in the best way possible. So look forward to that. Also have a couple other interviews coming up that I think will be of great interest to everyone out there. In the meantime, if you're interested in any of our past shows, be sure to check out the website at skeptiko.com. That's skeptiko.com. You'll also find links to our email address, previous episodes, transcripts. I'm trying to get more and more transcripts of the shows up there, and you'll find those there. So check out the website. Also have a blog going where I publish some additional information. And in this case, I've published the full text of the protocol that we're using on the blog. So check that out. I'll have a link there in the show notes. Well, that's going to about do it for today. Until next time, bye for now.
The only thing gets me out of this state.